Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugelsang. Thank you for joining us. Pleasure to have you here on Tell Me Everything at Channel 127. We got a great show planned tonight to celebrate the 75th birthday of NATO. Reverend Barry Lynn will be here, as will Julie Franchella and Simon Moya-Smith for our Indigenous Voices Hour. Let's pour out a 40 from my homies over at No Labels, the centrist political group. We love you guys. We really were looking forward to you finding the right Gen Z Lieberman to throw the election to Trump. But sadly, No Labels has decided to abandon their efforts to create a third-party presidential ticket for the 2024 U.S. election. Folks, when Joe Manchin turns you down for prom, maybe you want to stay home that year. They spent millions trying to recruit a candidate. They could not find a credible candidate that could win the election, because that candidate does not exist. And this is after Nancy Jacobson told allies they would announce their withdrawal from the presidential campaign on Monday. What happens to the tens of millions of dollars No Labels raised? I don't know, but someone's going to buy a boat. Chris Hausfeld is our executive producer. Thea Harper is our associate producer. And I got to tell you, friends, we got a lot of news to cover today. We're going to talk a bit more about Israel. President Biden chastised Israeli leadership over the murder of 7 aid workers. We've gone from concerned to angry to this morning we heard pissed, and now we're downgraded to chastised. It's all different layers of thoughts and prayers, although there may be some movement on the funding of military operations front. Those might just be more words. Here's the real news here. Donald Trump had a bad day. And I know there's a temptation to laugh when a rapist who steals from veterans has a bad day. I know it's really easy to be judgmental and cruel towards a guy who's banned from running a charity in the state of New York because he defrauded donors. I know that we're all human, and no matter how hard we try to be good people, sometimes you'll want to have some schadenfreude and enjoy the suffering of a man who calls women pieces of ass and has been a documented rapist since the 1970s. I realize this, but friends, I want to ask you to have some compassion, because no matter what you're carrying, Donald Trump is carrying something worse than you. Most likely something he's carrying requires a heavy dose of Valtrex several times a day. But what I'm trying to say is he's had a very bad day, worse than any bad day you've had probably in your life. And I want you to know the very bad day he just had will not make the top 20 bad days he's going to have this year. Shall we walk through it with all the sensitivity he deserves, all the empathy he's earned? Well, the judge in New York denied his request for a delay of the hush money trial until the Supreme Court can rule on his very silly presidential immunity delay tactic. This is a good thing. Judge Mershon, who's overseeing the hush money case here in New York, where you bribe a porn star to say you didn't have sex. That's what you got to remember. Dude pays women to say they didn't have sex with him, because that's what normal guys do. That's his official story. He paid her through Michael Cohen to because they didn't have sex. That's his take. That's kind of lost in the shuffle. But he's been begging them to wait until the Supreme Court rules on his claim of presidential immunity. This is silly for a couple of reasons. Number one, the alleged behaviors happened before he was president, so immunity wouldn't cover it. Number two, no one has absolute presidential immunity. The founders did not want to have a king. And he's looking into a situation where absolute presidential immunity can not only exist, but own a time machine. So Judge Mershon said no. The entire thing was to delay the trial. That's all it was. He's going to go on harassing judges. He's going to go on doxing judges. He's going to go on posting pictures of judges' kids. He's going to do anything he can do to try to make the inevitable not happen. He's willing to set the plane on fire so it can't deliver him to the penitentiary. But April 15th, friends, that's the date. And this judge is not going to let any of his antics delay it. They're not going to wait for the Supreme Court to deny his claim of presidential immunity because it doesn't exist. Trump filed those requests March 7th, 17 days before the trial was originally scheduled to start, and the judge wrote that their timing raises real questions about the sincerity and actual purpose of the motion. He also said Trump had myriad opportunities to raise the claim of presidential immunity well before March 7, 2024. So brothers and sisters, please share a moment of compassion for Donald Trump. The Supreme Court is going to hear oral arguments in this case on April 25th. That alone was disappointing, but it wasn't really why he had a bad day. You know, the judge in his RICO case in Georgia, the really bad one, just rejected his attempts to dismiss the case on free speech grounds. Judge Scott McAfee upheld the criminal indictment against Trump in Georgia, the Fannie Willis one, because it's valid. A grand jury saw evidence and returned indictments. And the judge dismissed the argument that Trump's attempts to overturn the 2020 election results were protected under the First Amendment. They're literally going for the lying is legal argument now. Remember to make your Trump loved ones defend that one if you have a chance. The Georgia case is outside the purview of a presidential pardon. It is a very serious case. It's a very strong case. And in Florida, his own personally hired judge, Aileen Cannon, denied Trump his bid to dismiss the classified documents case using the Presidential Records Act. Three different judges smacked him down today. While this was happening, his former attorney, John Eastman, is asking his judge, who just ordered his disbarment, to suspend her decision so he can continue to work as a lawyer and support his criminal defense. Yes, his biggest lawyer on January 6th is still disbarred. Now, in the midst of all of this, C-SPAN, which is a pretty reliable conservative place to go for Wall Street fans. God bless Larry Kudlow. I worked at C-SPAN for a year, and he was very nice to me. And it's sort of a Red Rover game. You go from C-SPAN or Fox News to a Republican White House, and then they send you back. So C-SPAN ran this clickbait headline today. Biden says U.S. economy is world's best. Trump calls it a cesspool. Data is clear. Oh, you didn't think they'd reveal it in the headline? No. You begin the article, President Joe Biden is fighting to convince inflation-weary voters that the U.S. economy is healthy. America has the best economy in the world, laying out an argument that is central to his re-election campaign. You keep on reading down, and former President Trump routinely depicts the U.S. as a commercial wasteland. You keep on reading down, and finally you get to the results, because they have to bury it, because it proves that Biden's right. The numbers paint a different picture. One more in line with Biden's narrative of American economic dominance than Trump's apocalyptic warnings. Inflation has fallen sharply from its 2022 highs. U.S. gross domestic product grew 2.5% in 2023, outpacing other developed economies. The labor market has been strong. Private companies added 184,000 jobs just in March. And the chief economist of Moody's says the U.S. economy is leading the way for the global economy. It's driving the global economic train. So on top of all this, I'm sorry, Citizen Trump, that CNBC, of all people, is saying, no, Trump's wrong. The economy's doing great. And the United States, for all of our economic problems, is having a greater and stronger recovery from COVID inflation than all of our capitalist allies. Joe Biden created over 15 million jobs out of this dung heap that was the Donald Trump economy, because this is what we've gotten used to, brothers and sisters, my entire adult life. Republicans leave an economy worse than they found it. Democrats leave an economy better than they found it. Clinton inherited a mess from Bush, left a surplus for Bush's son. Bush's son cratered the economy. Barack Obama turned it around. Donald Trump cratered the economy, and when the plague came, he lied incessantly and made the crater deeper. Joe Biden has turned it around, and America's economy is recovering better than any other developed nation. This is all Democrats should need in a sane society to campaign on. Four times as many jobs created under Biden as the last three Republican presidents combined. I'll say it again. Joe Biden's created more jobs in his administration than the last three Republican presidents combined four times over. Of the 45 million jobs created in the last 35 years, 96% have come under Democratic presidents. The last three Republican presidents exploded the deficit. Biden is the third straight Democrat to lower it. And Clinton raised taxes on the wealthy and balanced a budget with a surplus. So there you go. 34 million jobs from the 16 years of Clinton and Obama. How many jobs already? 15 million under Biden? About 2 million jobs total under the 16 years of Bush's and Trump. Trump presided over a net loss of 3 million jobs and a pre-COVID manufacturing recession and a deep economy-wide recession. And he can't stop lying. So remember way back on Monday, and this is the best part of the day. I know the judge is smacking him down. That's sad. We have to band together and give him thoughts, both thoughts and prayers. And I think Donald Trump is a man who's earned our thoughts and our prayers. I think things about him all the time, and I sometimes include God and pray to God that certain things happen to him. But back on Monday, way back on Monday, he posted the $175 million bond to stop collection of a $500 million judgment in the civil fraud case against him. And that kept Tish James from seizing his assets while he's appealing the verdict. And liberals were so upset when this happened and they gnashed their teeth and tore their garments. How did Donald Trump pull a rabbit out of a hat? He just had this stock boom on Friday, and now on Monday, some billionaire swoops in to give him the $175 million? Now, this is strange to me. Friends, I don't care if Donald Trump goes to jail. I really don't. This country is designed to make sure men like him hardly ever go to jail. For guys like Donald Trump to go to jail, you know, it usually has to involve a dead girl or a live boy. Or he's got to steal from rich people. That's usually about it. It doesn't matter to me. I don't need him to go to jail. He's a reality show. He's like the naked cowboy with a Secret Service detail. What I don't want is Donald Trump appointing more judges. I don't need him to go to prison. So again, George Carlin said, when you're born, you get a free ticket to the freak show. When you're in America, you get a front row ticket to the freak show. Some of us forget this and join the freak show. Guys, don't. Take a step back and don't get too emotionally involved in the travails of Donald Trump, because they're going to go up and down dramatically every day. Don't be that crazy liberal gnashing their teeth and being upset because Donald Trump had a momentary positive moment economically, like on Monday, $175 million bond to stop the collection of the $500 million judgment. Today, New York Attorney General Tish James had some questions about the company that posted that $175 million bond and bailed Trump out, wondering namely if that company is good for the money or is even legally allowed to operate in the state of New York. Knight Specialty Insurance Company, they're a relatively unknown company. He's a subprime auto loan guy. That's it. The dude's a subprime auto loan guy. They're the ones. And they were forced to reveal their finances because Donald Trump didn't post cash for this bond. This company did, but it turns out they didn't give the state of New York the certificate they were even qualified to do it and post it. She's asking them to do so. Otherwise, it's null and void. This is the bond surety after this subprime bond company appears to have, well, they over-leveraged. It turns out this company that was bailing out Trump might not have had enough cash on hand to cover the judgment. Do you understand, friends, what this means? This company rescued Donald Trump from having his property seized in his bank fraud case, where he's in trouble because he artificially inflated his assets. And it turns out this company has artificially inflated their assets, and they don't even meet New York standards. Donald Trump is so furious that someone he did business with would overinflate their wealth like this. He's now upgraded to borrowing money from people more broke than he is. So this is kind of beautiful. The Trump Media and Technology Group, you know, they went public last week and this was going to be the big thing to save it. And shares went really well in the first few days. We found out a couple days ago they only made $4.1 million in revenue last year and lost $58 million. With Trump claiming the company's worth $10 billion. Lost $58 million, made $4 million. This thing is tanking. And if you looked at the DJT on the ticker today, it's still going down. They have wiped out all their gains from going public. Again, it's such a disappointment. Donald Trump is calling it Eric. Oh, and it turns out only 5 of 49 Republican senators are on Truth Social. And again, I don't want to beat up on Donald Trump too hard, but I'm worried about his health, because I don't know if you've noticed this, but I kind of think he's having some memory gaps. He's sort of saying things that haven't happened, and I think he's imagining things. Speaking specifically about the event in Grand Rapids, Michigan this week, where he was talking about Ruby Garcia, 25-year-old girl who was killed. And the man charged with her death was in the U.S. unlawfully, according to immigration officials. And that's all Donald Trump needed to care about this murder. Now, there were other murders that happened in the U.S. There were murders that happened with guns all over the place. Donald Trump doesn't want to talk about those. He wanted to talk about a beautiful 17-year-old young woman who was savagely murdered by an illegal alien criminal. She's not 17. She was 25. I don't understand why he had to lie and make her younger for his story to work. But he said, again, he never met this poor woman, but he said, "She lit up that room, and I've heard that from so many people. I spoke to some of her family." Turns out, Donald Trump never spoke to any of her family. Never. Her sister has gone public about this and said, like, "We don't understand this. He's never spoken to anyone here. I was shocking. I kind of stopped watching it. I heard a couple of misinformations, but I had to stop watching it," said her sister. "It's always been about illegal immigrants. Nobody really speaks about when Americans do heinous crimes, and it's kind of shocking why he would just bring up illegals. What about Americans who do heinous crimes like that?" She's realizing that her late sister has been Benghazied. Her death has been exploited for crass political gain. I'd like to think our media will care about that. Don't you think if Barack Obama had lied, if Joe Biden had pretended to meet the families of fallen soldiers and lied about it, our media would care? Don't you think after Donald Trump showed up at the wake for an LA police officer last week who was killed during a traffic stop, he was there for Officer Diller, saying it was such a sad event, a horrible thing. The police are the greatest people we have, exploiting another murder for his campaign. A couple of days after, Donald Trump was on the stage defending people who are in jail for beating the hell out of police officers. Donald Trump supporters who waged a terrorist attack against the Capitol Police on January 6th. A couple of days before Trump showed up and exploited Officer Diller's murder for a campaign stop, for fundraising. He was calling men who beat cops unbelievable patriots and promised he would do something for them the first day he's in office. These are people who are in jail for trying to kill cops, and Trump's calling them patriots and saying he will pardon them. And then he shows up at a cop's funeral. And then he calls immigrants animals. Nobody should be dehumanized. And stop trying to justify speech meant to stir up hatred. This is where it is with Trump. It's not going to get better. It's only going to get dirtier. I've been really hard on Joe Biden this week. I will continue to be really hard on Joe Biden throughout the events as they unfold in the Middle East. But I will close by telling you he has taken a lead over Trump in the key swing state of Pennsylvania with a 10-point lead. This is polls conducted with including the Marquette Law School poll and the Franklin and Marshall poll. 48% Biden to Trump's 38%. And the lead is attributed to Biden's major legislative accomplishments during his first term. Joe, we're still rooting for you. We need you to win this. We don't want to have Donald Trump president because that would be a lot worse for the people of Palestine. Stop letting Netanyahu make you look weak. We want to know what you guys think. We're at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. We'll be back in just a moment with the Reverend Barry Lynn and your calls. This is SiriusXM Progress. We'll be right back.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This just in, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has just secured the presidential nomination of the heroin addicts who now tell people not to put needles in their arms party. Congratulations to, I would call him representative, but he's never been elected to an elective office before. I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. Reverend Barry Lynn is an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. He served as the executive director for Americans United for the Separation of Church and State for many years. He is a longtime activist, a civil liberties lawyer, and you've seen him over the years on PBS NewsHour, The Today Show, Nightline, 60 Minutes, basically every reputable news program you can think of, and ours too. Reverend Barry has also been published in the LA Times, USA Today, and The Wall Street Journal. His memoir is called Paid to Piss People Off, and I recommend it highly and enthusiastically and morally. It comes in three volumes, Peace, Porn, and Prayer. Reverend Barry, what a pleasure to welcome you back to SiriusXM.
It is so nice to be back here, and a happy Carrot Day to you. Do you know this is National Carrot Day?
I had no idea.
Yeah, well, we have these twin six-year-old granddaughters, and they've been fascinated by the fact that every day celebrates something, you know, like April Fool's Day the other day, and today is National Carrot Day.
I had no idea.
Yeah, well, wow. Eat a carrot. They're good for your eyes.
I don't know. There's got to be someone somewhere who's offended by this, Barry. Got to be somewhere there's someone who's outraged by this. How dare, I'm sorry, how dare the Carrot Association have their day 3 days after Easter Sunday, Reverend? Aren't you offended by that?
I'm offended by that. Just like Donald Trump was so offended by Transgender Appreciation Day, which happened this year.
Every year.
Circumstance, because it happens the same day. It happened to be on Easter. Now, Donald Trump did not go to church on Easter, but he did write some really unpleasant things about Joe Biden and about the judges in his various cases. But you're right. People get offended by everything. I go down rabbit holes on the internet every once in a while, and tonight I was looking at something, and there's a picture of a woman in a dress that she planned to wear to a series of weddings that she was going to this coming summer. It was a bright red dress. You cannot believe the number of people who said, don't wear that dress because it symbolizes something. And you know what it symbolizes? That
what?
A woman wearing a red dress to a wedding is signifying she has slept with the groom.
Oh.
How's that?
Yeah. I mean, I heard that when I was a kid. Do people still live by the old wives' tales like that?
Apparently they do. Apparently they do. Well,
Barry, where would we be without the fucked up folklore of America? Where would we be?
We would be possibly in another place, but
that's
going to
be Reverend. My next book with Reverend Barry is called "Fucked Up Folklore of America." Bill Moyers can't wait to not interview
you. Oh no, he's right. But Barry, yeah, Robert F. Kennedy.
Oh sure, okay, let's talk about him. Well, I would just to build on the Easter thing really quick. I want to talk to you about RFK, but you know, we've discussed it all week, and everyone's talked about Trump selling Bibles for $60 right before Easter. But I mean, the umbrage of these alleged Christians that Joe, even if they were telling the truth, that Joe Biden would declare this Transgender Visibility Day. Mm-hmm. It's on the 31st every year. If there's ever a date where conservative Christians should recognize that we are called to embrace the least of us and that we will be judged by the amount of mercy we show others, you would think the anniversary of the innocent man Jesus being executed by the state would stimulate a little bit of grace in these people. I mean, they're offended that Trans Visibility Day is on the same day as Easter. I'm offended that they take offense at this, like somehow Jesus shares their contempt for this marginalized group.
It's hard to believe, but they do. And, you know, there are even some really, really far right Christians who believe that the crucifixion was actually a good thing. Because by the resurrection of Jesus, this really sent off Christianity to be one of the most powerful religions in the world. So they don't see that form of capital punishment or any others as that bad because it led to a great outcome. That's how kooky some people are when it comes to religion.
Oh, I've got people defending Confederate slavery and Robert E. Lee right now defending the treatment of black slaves in the Americas because the Bible is pro-slavery somewhere. Right. Not Jesus, mind you.
No.
But parts of the Bible are pro-slavery. When if you read the Bible overall, the story of the Hebrews is rather, I would say, an anti-slavery narrative, wouldn't you, Reverend?
I would certainly agree. This is not a book that supports slavery. But, you know, that one other thing, I just wrote an essay for a exhibit in Western Pennsylvania about democracy. And it's incredible what people claim is necessary for a democracy. And many, many right-wing Christians, of course, claim that you have to read the Bible literally and apply it through the statutes of the United States. And there's a guy, he's a very interesting fellow named Wayne Grudem. He's a theologian of some note. He wrote a book called Politics According to the Bible. And in it, he doesn't just find biblical passages that he claims oppose abortion and LGBT rights, but even he finds in one book of the Bible a passage that he thinks tells the Air Force the next fighter plane it should purchase, the Raptor F-15.
Oh, precious.
Now, you know, you got to really...
What a man of faith, Barry.
What a man of faith. Yeah. Remember, and I remember being on CNN once when there was a woman named Bobby Batista who was on the afternoons. Remember her?
Of course.
She was a very engaging person. And we were talking about guns once, and I was on with some guy who said that the Bible defended guns and everyone should have them. And I said, well, what about that little story about David when he's going out to fight the giant Goliath? And they say, we'll give you a lot of weapons. And he said, I don't want any weapons. Just give me a slingshot and my faith in the Lord.
But I don't know what Bible verses support guns either. I mean, they claim Luke 22, but it's not. So, you know, I think they just this is what we've talked about in the past, Reverend. These Trump Christians, whatever you want to call them, fundamentalist, MAGA Christians, Christo fascists, Christians in name only, grab them by the pussy evangelicals. I have a million names for them, but they've created God in their own image. And they've created Jesus in their own image. We've talked about this. They don't care about welcoming the stranger. They don't want to take care of the sick. They want a Jesus who hates the same people they hate.
Yeah, there is another reference. In the book of Revelation, there is a phrase, the rod of iron, which these same people believe means, obviously means, guns. What other kind of rods of iron would you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's only the Bronze Age. What else could they be thinking of at guns?
Of course. Of course.
Amazing. So let me ask you about Bobby Kennedy, because we just learned today that the No Labels Party is not going to be a party. And it turns out when your ultimate Elvis sexy dream is Joe Manchin, maybe you've raised the bar a bit too much. So with them not going to be a threat, it would appear that this White House and Cornel West, I guess he's still running, but it appears this White House needs to retrain its focus a bit on Mr. Kennedy, who has done this show. I have been a big fan of his in many avenues professionally in the past. He announced his running mate, who has been a major donor to Democrats in the past, including Marianne Williamson and Pete Buttigieg. So the notion that somehow he's trying to hurt Trump is gone. Where do you stand right now on Robert Kennedy Jr., who I know you admired as a lawyer for many years, too?
I did, and I even admired him when he said that people who voted for Ralph Nader should not have done so because he siphoned off so many votes away from Al Gore. And I've talked to Nader many times about this, and I'm almost convinced that he didn't, that he in fact drew some new people out to vote for House and Senate candidates. But certainly he drew a lot of votes away from Al Gore. Now, the vice presidential candidate, Nicole Shanahan, the more I learn about her, the stranger she is, because she is not a person. She's a person who does not, for example, she doesn't want to ban IVF, in vitro fertilization. But she says we should be spending more time, more money investigating why it is that women can't have reproductive health into their 50s, and that we should study that. Now, it's kind of like the people who say, I don't want to die. I think I'm going to have my head cut off and frozen so that it can be attached to a body after my death, and then I'll come back to life. And but there are people who are somewhat well-known people who do that. Even I think Walt Disney even had his body frozen so that he could come back and reinvent Mickey Mouse. Now that
I hope
Mickey
that's
Mouse
true,
is-
Reverend, because that gives a whole new ring to Disney on Ice. I just want to believe it so bad, just for that joke to finally work.
We don't know how much Nicole Shanahan is worth, but the estimates are $50 to $100 million, and it could be much more, because the settlement that she had with the founder of Google, to whom she was married at I think 12 years, is the 10th richest man in America. And I think he's the 10th richest in the world. And she had wanted $1 billion, but they sealed all the records, so you can't really know how much she has. But she certainly has $100 or $150 million. And we know she spent it because she was the principal funder of that Super Bowl ad for RFK Jr., which so enraged the entire Kennedy family that they all came out, did a picture together, and said, you know, we love Bobby, but we're not going to vote for him, and no one should vote for him.
We also know something else about her. We know that she has decided that her money and efforts drawing enough votes away from Joe Biden in 7 swing states so Donald Trump can gain the White House and pass a national abortion ban is acceptable to her. We know that Donald Trump passed, because he has promised to pass a national abortion ban. We don't know how long, but he's made the promise. And that's acceptable to her and Bobby Kennedy Jr., right? Are you worried for the president?
Yes. I mean, and I think months ago I said I wasn't worried. I think some of the polling data looks much better, including the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal poll of a few days ago had him winning Wisconsin, but losing all the other swing states. But as you mentioned, that Franklin and Marshall poll that came out just today said he's 10 points ahead, even if Kennedy is in the race. So that's the good news. But the bad news is there are so many swing states. I think it's important that people remember just how close the election was, the Biden-Trump election. I mean, Biden won Georgia by 11 or 12,000 votes. That's right. In North Carolina, Trump won by something like 70,000 votes. I mean, these are very close elections. And siphoning off a few people is really dangerous and could result in the election of, you know, of Trump again. His anti-vaccine statements are so incredible and weird, but now he started to deny them. In fact, even Chris Cuomo, who has once again resurfaced from being fired from CNN, he is now on something called News Nation. I'm not even sure my extensive cable system has it.
No, I can tell you all about News Nation, Barbara. Yeah.
but he, you know, when Cuomo just interviews him a few days ago and then has the tape, the audio and videotape to demonstrate what he has said, and then Kennedy just denies it. Well, I didn't really say that, or yeah. I said some of that, but they cut me off, you know, any kind of excuse. Back in the beginning of the COVID epidemic, 2021, the great baseball player Hank Williams, I had a chance to meet him once. What a wonderful, wonderful guy.
Hank Aaron?
Hank Aaron.
What did I say? I said Hank Williams. I'm sorry. Go on, please.
Oh, no, Hank Williams. He's dead, too. Hank Williams. Here's what Kennedy said. Aaron's death is part of suspicious deaths among many elderly closely following administration of COVID vaccines. Well, there was no mysterious group of deaths in the elderly. And Aaron was 86 years old at the time. I mean, that's a pretty good long life. But he says these things. And then if he's asked a comment now, he goes, well, I just meant, you know, a lot of people die and he could have died or something else. I want people, if they're going to have kooky ideas, then please stick to them and don't say, well, I never said that. I've been misquoted. They cut me off.
Yeah.
And he remember what he said about abortion. He's interviewed by NBC. He's standing in a hallway and it is somewhat noisy, but three times, not once, but three times the interviewer asks him about abortion. And he says, well, I think we might need to do some regulation after the first trimester. And then the interviewer says, well, I mean, are you talking about 8 weeks or 15 weeks? And, well, that might be right. He answers the questions. Then he's so embarrassed what he said, because now he says, well, I would never want to inhibit the autonomy of any woman on anything. But, you know,
he's campaigning to. He's spending Nicole Shanahan's money to do exactly that, because he has no chance of winning. And he is being his top financier is Tim Mellon, who is also Trump's top donor to Trump's super PAC. So he's being staked by bad right wing guys who know he could shave just enough people away from Biden in the seven states that matter. And that's the only reason we're talking about him. Right. Is there any other reason?
No, there's no other reason. But now, one of the things Biden needs to do, and he's starting to do this, he needs to find substitutes who go into Hispanic communities, who go into African-American communities, and talk to them about what Biden has done. And it's, so far, it's been quite effective in Nevada and New Mexico with a huge Hispanic population, because Kennedy has said, well, Cesar Chavez was a close friend of my grandfather, John Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And the Cesar Chavez Foundation, as well as the United Farm Workers, have both said, look, don't bring Cesar Chavez's name into this, because Cesar Chavez would never have voted for RFK Jr. Never would have voted for him. And that Trump didn't care a hoot about farm workers or Hispanic populations and the early days of COVID.
Mm. We are at 866-997-4748. Barry, do you want to talk to a couple of listeners? We have
people
who want to speak to the Reverend.
Sure.
Stacy is on line 7 from California. Stacy, good evening and welcome. You're on Sirius XM with the Reverend Barry Lynn. Hi.
I'm truly honored to speak with you, Barry, and the timing couldn't be better. Last night, Alex Wagner did a report on a man named Joel Hinton, who runs something called LifeWise, and it's a program that provides Bible education to public school students during school hours. How is this possible?
It's because nobody's sued them yet. But, you know, separation of church and state is not having the highest point of its visibility in recent decisions by the Supreme Court. But there are victories. And one victory area for people who want to litigate is to go into those schools where they invite either chaplains in to chat with the students, or these phony curricula that are really promotions of Christian teachings in the name of education.
Right.
I just don't understand. I really thought that we had separation of church and state. Silly me.
We do, but it has to be enforced. It has to be enforced.
Let me ask you another question. What do you think would happen if an imam wanted to bring the Quran into public schools during public school hours?
Well, I do. I actually know what happens. And what happens is parents get incredibly upset. They go and protest. They demand that the imam be eliminated. And then if you say to them, but what about the Bible people coming in? They go, well, that's different because we are a Christian nation, which isn't true, but that's all the rhetoric. There are a whole curricula set up for children and adults to learn the Bible from a Christian perspective.
They've been raised to believe that.
They have. And they're
trying to... It says God's name on our money, Barry. I mean, how more holy could we be? We put God's name on our filthy money. It's got to be legit.
Right. We use it to buy drinks, to hire hookers, but that's okay because the name is there and you can look at it after you've done something not so hot.
I mean, Stacey, I share your frustration when I hear about schools trying to hang up the Ten Commandments or what have you. They never want to hang up, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, mind you. Never the Jesus stuff, just the Ten Commandments so kids won't commit adultery. But it just seems like if the school's not going to enforce this, it comes down to the parents. And we've seen our right-wing parents get mixed up in school boards and lawsuits all the time to stop things they don't like. It's going to require more people or ACLUs coming in to stop these things from happening in the public schools because, you know, if no one complains, it happens. It's true in putting religion in schools and in the mafia.
It's truly unbelievable. Every time I think I can't be shocked, you know, something else happens and I am.
Oh, you better get strapped in for this year, Stacey. It's going to be a very interesting
one.
Thank you so much, Stacey.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. We will be right back with your calls at 866-997-4748. This is SiriusXM Progress.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is SiriusXM Progress. I'm John Fugel saying we are at 866-997-4748, 866-997-GRIT. I am so pleased to welcome back Simon Moya-Smith and Julie Francella for everybody's favorite segment. Simon is an Oglala Lakota and Chicano journalist. He's a contributing writer at NBC News and TheNation.com. He's the author of the forthcoming book, Your Spirit Animal is a Jackass. He is adjunct professor of Indigenous Studies at the University of Colorado, Denver. Welcome, Simon. It's good to have you with us.
Yeah, love to be here, man.
Thank you. Julie Francella is an activist, an artist, a writer, and a veteran mental health professional with over 28 years of experience working with complex trauma in the clinical field. She served as executive director of a domestic violence center and spent 13 years as a clinical caseworker at a residential treatment center for Indigenous youth and families. Julie's an enrolled member of the Ojibwe of Botswana First Nation Reserve, and she works with First Nations University of Canada and is a professor at Durham College, where she teaches about the profound impacts of colonization on First Nations people. Julie, thank you so much for being with us. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. I'd like to begin, if it's okay with you guys, with this tweet from Elon Musk. It may seem trivial, but trivializing seems to be what he's doing. It's gotten a lot of attention, but I guess he's just being petulant and put out this tweet. I'm trying to actually pull up I thought I had it. It came up a blank graphic, but he's essentially, here it is. We live on stolen land. By we, I mean us mammals. We stole it from the dinosaurs. And then a couple of emojis. When I first saw it, I just thought, well, what a childish joke. What are you, nine? And then I realized, well, that's not even correct science. We didn't steal anything from the dinosaurs. And then I realized this is a South African apartheid millionaire at birth mocking ethnic cleansing. Am I getting this wrong in any way? I mean, Simon, I don't want to be unfair to the guy, but it certainly seems like he's deliberately taking the depopulation of North America for a joke.
Oh, yeah. But that's not uncommon. I mean, and again, when he tweeted that, I wasn't offended because it's him. You know, I'm not offended when Trump says something. I'm not offended when Jesse Waters says something horrible. I expect that from them. But yes, it does diminish and trivialize Indigenous people. And then also the genocide of Indigenous people. That's not a word a lot of people associate with Indigenous people, westward expansion, manifest destiny. But that is what happened. And so it completely ignores the fact that we were here. White people came here and said, we're going to kill them. We're going to starve them. And we're going to just take everything in the name of Jesus Christ. So when he said, you know, we took it from the dinosaurs. Well, you know, the dinosaurs didn't have to suffer with white people. I mean, we did. That's the reality of it. Even when we were telling
my producer
them,
Thea has to suffer with white people all the time. Me and Chris, I know how painful it can be.
So that's why it was so ridiculous anyway. I mean, I looked at it. I'm like, it's Elon Musk. Fuck that guy left and right. But again, it's not uncommon for Americans specifically to ignore the genocide of Indigenous people and say, well, you guys are from somewhere else, too.
Well, I mean, it's not uncommon for us to ignore it. We're socialized to not take it seriously in this country. But I got to say, most Caucasians aren't socialized to actually have enough awareness of a term stolen land and then mock that. Like, Julie, I think this is even worse than plain old ignorance, because by him using the phrase we live on stolen land, it indicates he's learned enough to learn that sentence. And then he has to turn it into a juvenile joke.
Well, I mean, you know, genocide, land theft, cultural erasure, you know, it's dismissive of the gravity of these experiences. And, you know, in case you didn't get the memo, Elon, genocide isn't funny. But the problem is, you're right. He did get the memo. You know, he comes from South Africa. He has pretty, well-rounded knowledge about global issues. I think it's just that he doesn't care. And this isn't the first time that Elon has had bad blood with Indigenous people. Elon Musk's SpaceX has come under scrutiny for its impact on Indigenous lands and communities, particularly, I think it's the expansion of its Boca Chica, Texas launch sites, which the Carrizo Comacrudo tribe considers this to be on sacred land. And the tribe has expressed concerns over restricted access to public beaches and areas used for SpaceX activities, arguing that this infringes on their rights and desecrates sacred sites. So it's kind of in Elon Musk's interest to kind of dismiss Indigenous people. It's good for his business. So, this just kind of plays into his business exploitations.
I mean, and the worst thing about this is when you read the comments below his tweet about we live on stolen land, it's split between people calling him out for his stupid, racist, puerile nonsense, And then the people who are agreeing with him and posting images that say it's okay to be white, you know, and it just seems like, oh, this guy is just doing what he does. He tweaks the racists on this side and the anti-racists on this side and makes them fight each other for his own engagement, which is pathetic. It's the trivialization of genocide that makes it sinister.
Yeah.
Constantly. But again, you're not wrong. He's if anything, it's like we're his puppets that he's playing with. He's basically throwing something into a pin and watching all of us fight each other. And he's having a blast with just watching these two crowds go at each other. But yeah, and I love how you pointed it out that he has to have known the term stolen land, or you're on stolen land. Maybe he went into an REI and saw all of those hats that the beanies that say you are on stolen land. And then, of course, he wanted to make a joke about it. But
of course,
it's not uncommon for us to wear those hats and those beanies for people to give us a grimace, for people to look at you and go, oh, yeah, my great granddaddy didn't steal the land, or I didn't steal the land. Oh, the pioneers stole the land. And then we have to have those conversations with them because they're not having them in the schools when they were kids growing up.
Why are so many people so threatened by what people they'll never know did hundreds of years ago being spoken of? I mean, you know, why would the average white person, if they're a decent and confident person, be at all threatened or feel defensive to learn what long ago generations did? I just don't understand this defense of dead crimes.
Well, I think it all comes back to the land, too. I mean, again, you know, the United States can apologize for slavery. They can apologize for atrocities. But when you apologize to an indigenous person, you could say, I'm sorry for the Trail of Tears. I'm sorry for removal. I'm sorry for prison camps. Sorry, and that's it. But it's like, wait, apologize, but give the land back. You can't just apologize and not give us the land back. That's the whole problem. And then when we say things like you are on stolen land, people take it personally because they want to really, truly believe that everybody in their family wasn't a racist, that their great grandfather was a friend of an Indian. And so he doesn't want to dishonor his grandfather's memory. And so they take it personally. Again, that's why we have such a hard time with Columbus Day. Like, I cannot get rid of Columbus Day. It was a representation of the United States accepting my great grandfather who came here from Sicily with a dollar in his pocket, things like that. So they personalize it, and they have a hard time when indigenous people walk in the room and say, yeah, you're on stolen land. And they really sometimes don't even have a response.
I mean, I would have no problem with a federal holiday for any Italian who was not a genocidal dickhead. I mean, Americo Vespucci, we named the country after an Italian. Go ahead, give him a holiday. I'll show up for it. It's not that controversial. Let me go to the phones. Mitch from Kent State wants to say hello to Simon and Julie. Mitch, welcome. You're on Sirius XM.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Simon and Julie. First of all, John, if I may real quick, in honor of Dr. King, just a quick story. My mom, about 60 years ago, her and her sister, when Dr. King was coming to Canton, Ohio, So they didn't get a ticket for the speech, but they did get to see the motorcade. And my mom never forget the day, that day, because she almost locked eyes with him as he's passing in the car. It's just something she never forgot. And I just want to, you know, remember that day that happened in 1964. It was before the Civil Rights Bill was signed and everything. So it was that time between Kennedy's assassination and the Civil Rights Bill, but just a moment that we got to share with her.
Wow. 56 years John, today.
Yes, that's right. John and Simon, Julie, the eclipse is passing right over us here on Monday. We're in the direct path of it. And I was reading, there was a thing about the indigenous people and their history of the eclipse. As far as the traditions and the ceremonies, I guess the Navajo and the Dine people, is that right? They have different ways of celebrating.
Mm-hmm. For the eclipse,
yeah, every tribe, every nation does. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But they were saying that the Navajo Nation has one, maybe a particular way of doing it, and the other tribes have other ways of. Some stay at home, some actually have their own celebrations. I just, you know, just a little clarity.
How do different nations observe, guys? How do different nations observe an occasion like an eclipse?
Oh, God, man. Julie, do you want to go first? I can answer this.
I've never even thought about it. Yeah.
It's different for, different nations. A lot of our stargazing and a lot of our nations used the eclipse as a means of different ceremonies and, sacred in different ways. And so, for our nations, it was, again, we talk about star people, mm-hmm. and we talk about, those things are very apparent in our world and in our teachings. And so for our nations, those types of things are very sacred. And so,
right.
I don't know, Simon? If Simon, you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. I really wanted you to go first because I love your story, the star people. Yeah, that's
I've never
creation.
Heard of the star people before. What is the star people?
The star people are basically, some might say, our ancestors that come from the stars. And so there are some prophecies saying that there are star people that are to come down here. And some people think that those are aliens. And some people think that those are just, heavenly bodies that are our ancestors in the stars. Yeah. And so that's very much part of our tradition in our teachings. So I don't know, Simon, if you have the same thing. So the eclipse would, sort of tie into that as well, being very sacred, a sacred time.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I have to emphasize, it's going to be very different for every tribe and nation, depending on where they are on Turtle Island, meaning the Azteca and the Mayan are going to have a different approach to it and raise people, the Yupik and Inupiaq way up there in northern Alaska. They're going to have a different reaction to it. But one thing I thought was really cool was one of our readers actually reminded me what I learned in school. This is called Tecumseh's Eclipse. Basically, when white people came here, he was like, we need to unify all the tribes and nations. They're showing up. And if anybody has seen Dances with Wolves, there's a great scene where Kevin Costner is talking to Graham Greene's character. And he says, how many white people are going to come? And he says, like the stars. And you see this, Graham Greene's character just completely fade. And so anyway, that historically, the reason it's called Tecumseh's Eclipse is because this white governor came over and we were like, oh, shit, Tecumseh's and his son were like, we got to unify all the people. And so he goes, what we're going to do is we're going to blot out the sun. And if we blot out the sun, then you'll see that the creator's on our side and that will unify the people. And then when that happened, it scared the shit out of him, the governor.
Wow. Yeah. I never knew this.
Yeah, everybody look it up. I swear Tecumseh's Eclipse, it's a pretty fun story.
Right on. Mitch, thank you so much for the call. We're at 866. Thank you, Mitch. 866-997-4748. Hey, can I ask about sundown towns? Because Julie, you had been talking about this story in the Denver Post in I think Minden, Nevada, where this sundown town still blares a siren every day at 6 p.m. And it's sort of considered to be a relic of a previous era when non-white people were warned it was time to get out of town soon. I have to confess, I hadn't heard about Minden, Nevada. What is going on and what is the controversy?
Well, it's not just Minden, Nevada. Minden, Nevada is one of the towns where this sundown siren is still being heard. So I think 6 p.m. every night. So for some of the Minden residents, the siren's daily sound is a piece of what they would say their heritage. It's a small town identity. So, for a lot of these small communities, it evokes a sense of nostalgia and community spirit. However,
and it's just a big siren noise every night at 6 p.m.
Yep,
just a blast. Okay. Okay. Go on.
Well,
I'm sorry.
However, for the members of the Washoe tribe and other non-white communities, it's a haunting reminder of exclusion and violence. It really is a symbol of a past that can't be divorced from its original context. So what it was is whenever the siren went off, I think it started in the 1920s, and it stopped meaning this in 1974, more or less, but the siren went off at sundown to warn the Native Americans and other non-white people mm-hmm. that they needed to leave the town. And if they didn't leave the town, they would be arrested or they would be beaten. And so this siren, that's what it represents. That's what it was used for, not just in this particular location, but all across the United States. So the question is, mm-hmm. you know, how do we reckon with historical symbols that carry a legacy of oppression? You know, there's this clash yeah. between, you know, viewing this siren as heritage, you know, as many of the residents say it's their heritage and it's nostalgic, but seeing it as a vestige of, they're saying it's cancel culture. They're saying, oh, you just want us to stop doing this because, you know, what it used to represent, and that's cancel culture. And that kind yeah. of, yeah, it is.
It's lynching it culture.
You know, the,
lynching right,
that's
culture.
Their Confederate flag.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But, you know, it's this, I think, a microcosm of the larger challenges that United States faces in addressing and reconciling with, you know, these historical injustices. And it's yeah. fascinating that people are fighting against having this siren, you know, sort of removed and stopped.
Well, and what's weird to me is that this has been happening every day in the early evening for 103 years. But mm-hmm. Until 1974, it was a warning to non-white people. But I guess in 1974, they said, oh, no, no hidden meaning here, non-white people. No, you're fine. And then just kept doing it anyway, every night, to remind folks yeah. of the good old days, I guess. I mean, Simon, I'm sure you have thoughts.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, we have to remember, and if sundown towns are a real thing. You can go on YouTube and watch amateur videos of certain sundown towns, even in the South. You're going to find more stories about sundown towns in the South with the Black community than you'll find about sundown towns around reservations. So with Indigenous people, for example, the Washoe people are only 5 miles from this honky town where they're hanging on to their racism and saying it's cancel culture, where even the elders remember that time hearing that bell, which meant you get your brown ass, you get your red ass, you get in the yeah. door, you stay inside, or they're going to come out and lynch you. They're going to come out and murder you. They're going to come out and arrest you and harass you. And so the fact that they want to hang on to this legacy of hate and racism just demonstrates, again, the ignorance and arrogance of these people, because that's all they have. That's all yeah. they feel they have. And again, I hate to take it back to sports mascots. When it was the Washington football team, they really believed that that was their culture. Like sports fanaticism, they truly believed that if the name changed, they would have nothing to give to their kids. And that's the same thing on the local level. Anywhere like in a small town and the football team is a savage and they don't want to change the name because that's their heritage.
That is their heritage, Simon. I mean, the Redskins were the last NFL franchise to desegregate, and President Kennedy had to force them to. That racism is their heritage.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the hard part here is like trying to talk sense into people who are just so like they will not let go of something, even if it is found to be racist. So if you read the Denver Post article, and I used to write for the Denver Post, and I'm not a big fan, but that's a whole nother story. But if you read this article, you'll see that they try to rationalize it by saying, well, it's more like a dinner bell. No, that's more of our, you know, small town dinner bell that we don't want to let go of. So just trying to like erase what actually happened, rewrite it, and then say we're the ones guilty of cancel culture. You just totally erased the fucking history, rewrote it entirely to convenience you and your racism and your racist history. And so these Amazing. Towns still yeah. exist in the North. And when I say the North, I'm not talking about the Northeast. We're talking about westward expansion, removing Indigenous people from the East Coast. So you find it in yeah. places like Arizona, New Mexico, North Dakota, South Dakota, Northern Nevada, Idaho. That's where you're going to find most of these sundown towns.
Mm. Yeah.
Julie, is that a phenomenon in Canada or is that something Americans can be proud of?
I don't think that we have sundown towns in Canada, but there's definitely a lot of smaller communities I won't name the provinces, but where Native Americans, Indigenous people are not welcome or were not welcome.
Yes. Yes. You know, you've shared some incredible stories about that. Simon,
that's
mentioned
old phrase, when the sun goes down.
Yeah.
Right? That's what, like, the threatening of African Americans in the South. That's where that phrase comes from, when the sun goes down.
You mentioned mascots. And we've talked in the past about the Chicago Blackhawks and how they're trying to keep their name and their mascot. And we've always viewed this in terms of capitalism, that eventually when enough consumers have a problem, the team owners will change a name and it's going to be economic pressure, blah, blah, blah. It seems that local politicians in the state of Illinois are finding a really creative way to increase the pressure. What is going on right now with Illinois that could impact the Chicago Blackhawks?
Well, they introduced a bill recently in the Illinois House that would require schools to change their mascots, you know, not just the mascots, the logos, anything that has a reference to indigenous culture and just our caricatures, playing Indian, essentially. And so they need to change their school mascot and name by September 1st, 2027.
Yeah, that's amazing. What would happen? Yeah, kids can't buy the merch. Go ahead, Julie.
No, I was going to say the thing that I think I really appreciate about this Illinois taking this legislative action is that I think it's going to spark nationwide conversations about the use of Native American mascots and imagery. And I think for me, the hope is that it'll start encouraging other states and organizations to reevaluate, you know, their practices. And dialogue is good, you know, talking about these things. It's good.
Well, what's going to happen is also, you know, they're going to, the team, the Blackhawks, is a professional team. It's the NHL. So essentially what's going to happen is if this bill passes, and I hope it does, all the schools will not allow to have any racist or indigenous or Indian mascot logo representation, anything that would dehumanize us or caricaturize us. But then the sports team would still be the Blackhawks. And so I wonder how this would translate. So if a kid goes to school and he's wearing, you know, a logo, the logo of the Blackhawk, and seeing how that would play out. But again, the NHL, the Blackhawks, they're dragging their feet. They always want to say that we're honoring you. We're honoring Sauk, we're Blackhawk from the Sauk Nation. And always. So, no, okay, even if you think that you're honoring, you haven't learned how to honor us yet. I've said this 1,000 times before, that's the problem. People will still show up in red face and headdress and tomahawk chop and, you know, war whoop. And then when you confront them, they'll claim to be a quarter Cherokee or a quarter Métis Blackfoot. And we have to deal with that. It opens the door. Opens the door to racism against indigenous people.
Yeah. And or the line I always get, oh, the Indians don't mind. They don't mind.
Bullshit.
They like the name. Oh, I hear that all with the Redskins forever. Okay, we have a bunch of people on hold who want to say hi to you guys. So I'm going to ask if we can take our break right now, be back in a couple of minutes, take some calls and maybe do some Did You Knows. Sound good?
That sounds good.
It's on. We'll be back in just a moment with more of Simon and Julie. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're at 866-997-4748. We're going to have open phones for hour number three, so we're getting to everybody's call tonight. 866-997-GRIT. This is Progress.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back with Simon Moya-Smith and Julie Francella. Jessica in Oregon is online, too. Jessica, thank you for your patience. You're on SiriusXM. Welcome.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for calling.
Julie and Simon, it's wonderful to finally be on an episode with you. I've talked to John in the past about the fact that I grew up in an area that didn't really have a lot of history that was relevant to anything that wasn't white. And it's pretty sad. You were talking about sundown towns, and that reminded me, I grew up near Anna, Illinois. If you know what ANNA stands for, that was kind of the moniker of the town.
And what does it stand for? I'm sorry, I don't. Can you tastefully tell us?
Yeah, ain't no N-words around.
Got it.
Jesus.
Wow.
Yeah, and you can actually read up on that. That's a known thing with that place. But what's wonderful is I have a healthy love of comic books, film, sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and I was curious what you all thought of, like, this upswing where people my age who should know better but don't, and young people are learning these wonderful and amazing pieces of history that we weren't told about, mm-hmm. thanks to shows like The Watchmen and Ms. Marvel Echo, and especially What If, which just created an entire Mohawk character.
Prey, I thought was terrific. Yeah, I loved Prey. Great. That was great.
Yeah, and I just was curious, you know, what you think about that and the fact that we're learning this from... I had no idea about any of these things that happened, like Little Africa, the partition. I had no idea because we weren't taught that in school.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Julie, you're my official Marvel expert. What do you think?
I've been recommending the What If episode to everybody that I know. Also, Echo, too. I mean, it's by design that you're not taught about these things. It's by design that you're not mm-hmm. taught about, you know, the residential school system. It's by design, you know, this whole idea of whitewashing history. Simon has said it 100 times. You can't be the greatest nation on, you know, earth if you're guilty of a genocide. And people don't want to know that about their own country. I was talking to a friend of ours from Australia who's German, and she was saying that she's German, and she was saying if it was up to Germany, they would not admit to what happened with the Holocaust. It's because of the Jewish people and the rest of the world that everybody has to remember. And that's how I think of, you know, the history here. You know, if it was up to, you know, a lot of people who don't want the true history of the United States and Canada known, you know, it would be that whitewashed slavery was great for, you know, people. Yeah, they learned exactly. skills, and it was that kind of thing, right? And so it's by design that the history books don't include these stories. And so, you know, opportunities like this for us to talk a little bit about the true history is important. And shows like that, you know, at least start the conversation and start people wondering about, wait, what really happened here on this land?
And haven't artists and storytellers always truly led the way more than politicians or historians or schools? I mean, you know, Killers of the Flower Moon and Echo, Prey, that, you know, they might not be the ideal vehicles for people to learn history and culture, but they're way ahead of the school system, and it's nice to mm-hmm. see the culture catching up. And if people are going to learn through an entertaining artist doing good storytelling, I mean, that's sort of how the truth's always gotten out, Simon, isn't it?
Yeah. And Reservation Dogs being another one.
Reservation
Dogs, that's Sterling
yeah.
Harjo, an indigenous person who, you know, he went to FX and he got that out there. And I think, and we also have to remember, it's the proliferation of the internet that changed things. Because before, you know, let's say it's in the 1970s, it was just radio, television, and movies. You know, TV shows, of course. But, you know, now with the proliferation of the internet and social media, you get the indigenous voice in your pocket on Instagram and on Twitter or X or whatever, our responses are in real time. Our stories are on in real time. So you don't have to rely on a university or a encyclopedia. You can do it on your own. You can Google sundown towns on YouTube instead of having
That's
to,
right.
well, let me see what I can find out. And hopefully, you know, this radio, local radio show or our news station will report on these things. We have that access to you guys. You have that access to us, because we have to remember a lot of reservations were first first established as prison camps. Now they're called reservations. Right. But the idea was that we would be so geographically isolated that you wouldn't have to deal with the quote unquote Indian problem. But now that distance has been completely annihilated online, where we can respond to you immediately and you can even ask us questions, sending us just DMs on Instagram. So I love the fact that we're able to tell these narratives, but I'm really happy through social media, through the internet, the distance between you and us is closed.
I love that.
Amen.
Yeah.
One of the things I was thinking, you know, well, we talk about this intergenerational trauma and, you know, but the blood in our veins carries rushing rivers of intergenerational resilience and pleasure and joy and collective creative forces and a spirit fire that could never be extinguished against all odds and acts of atrocities. And that, to me, you know, the internet is closing that gap. The internet is showing our stories and showing that we're not just, you know, spoken of in past tense, like your Ray was saying, you know, were. Yeah. We're here and we shouldn't be here. You know, we shouldn't be here. We're not supposed to be here.
That's right.
If according to their plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
According to the plan, we are not supposed to be here. So the fact that we're still here, it speaks volumes about Indigenous people and our resilience.
Thank God for the inferiority of white supremacy. I love this segment. Thank you both. Julie, what's the best way for our listeners to follow you and your work?
On Instagram or Twitter at Julie Francella.
Simon?
On Instagram at Simon Said Take a Pic, and then on Twitter or X at Simon Moya Smith.
Guys, thank you both so much. I've spent all week looking forward to it. We'll see you next week. This is Sirius XM. I'm John Fugelsang. Peace.